Hello there. Today is Thursday, October 5th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump offers prayers and condolences to the victims of Sunday night's shooting massacre in Las Vegas, Nevada.
We will all have to wrestle with the horror of what has unfolded this week, but we will struggle through it together.
Las Vegas police give an update on the investigation as many Americans call for stricter gun laws. Well, despite some reports, Secretary of State Tillerson says he's not resigning. And baseball stars romance with a pop singer earning him points with his kids. It's all on today's International Edition. Solemn in the face of tragedy, President Donald Trump visited hospital bedsides and a vital police base in stricken Las Vegas Wednesday, offering prayers and condolences to the victims of Sunday night's shooting massacre. Speaking next to First Lady Melania, Trump offered the nation's thanks to all who rushed to save lives.
We pray for the recovery of the injured and those injured officers who so bravely threw themselves into danger when duty called. And we grieve the loss of the law enforcement personnel who were killed in this vicious attack. Many families tonight will go to bed in a world that is suddenly empty. The people they so dearly love were torn away from them forever. Our souls are stricken with grief for every American who lost a husband or a wife, a mother or a father, a son or a daughter. We know that your sorrow feels endless. We stand together to help you carry your pain. You're not alone. We will never leave your side.
Well, investigators continue to work to unravel the mystery of what caused Stephen Paddock to kill 58 people and wound close to 500 others. Las Vegas Metropolitan Sheriff Joseph Lombardo gave an update on the investigation.
More than 100 investigators have spent the last 72 hours combing through the life of 64-year-old Stephen Paddock to produce a profile of someone I will call disturbed and dangerous. What we know is Stephen Paddock is a man who spent decades acquiring weapons and ammo and living a secret life, much of which will never be fully understood. He meticulously planned on the worst domestic attack in United States history.
The lawyer for the girlfriend of the Vegas shooter said the woman had no idea Paddock was planning any violence. Mary Lou Danley spent much of the day Wednesday being questioned by federal agents in Los Angeles, where she arrived from the Philippines. Danley's lawyer told reporters she was in the Philippines to visit family. Paddock had sent her $100,000 while she was there, telling her to buy a house. Danley was worried Paddock was breaking up with her, her lawyer said, adding that Danley regarded Paddock as a caring, quiet man. Well, the mass shooting in Las Vegas that left 58 people dead and hundreds more wounded reignited a familiar debate on Capitol Hill Wednesday as congressional Democrats and Republicans accused each other of playing politics with the gun control debate. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson looks at whether the time is right for change on Capitol Hill.
Shots fired, 4:15 a.m.
Horror as hundreds are cut down by a sniper. Followed by the rituals of grief.
May he turn his peace.
And a now familiar sense of frustration.
Thoughts and prayers need to be matched by action. The reason why we exist is to act, is to change the laws of the nation to address challenges.
5 years ago, a gunman murdered 20 children in Murphy's home state of Connecticut. He blamed Congress's inaction for this latest tragedy.
Because we have done nothing, the mass shootings continue.
But in America's divisive dialogue on guns, even timing is up for debate. President Trump saying that discussion was still ahead, joined by congressional Republicans who said the tragedy was still too fresh to discuss new laws.
Look, the investigation's not even been completed, and I think it's premature to be discussing legislative solutions, if there are any.
And one that couldn't be solved by regulating guns.
As we see the dust settle and we see what was behind some of these tragedies, that mental health reform is a critical ingredient to making sure that we can try and prevent some of these things from happening.
Reform that doesn't infringe on the rights of gun owners, who can be a powerful voice at the ballot box.
I don't think restrictions do anything but prevent honest, law-abiding people from getting a weapon that they need and deserve to have, and, you know, with the freedoms we have in America.
And while Hill Republicans said the other side was playing politics with guns,
the Democrats are going to keep politicizing every tragedy that occurs. I think that's despicable on their part. You know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the victims here. This is not the time to automatically reach into the desk drawer and pull out gun control again.
Angry Democrats said Republicans were the ones putting politics ahead of people.
Follow the money. You know, the NRA and the Gun Owners of America have spent a lot of money to try to change the narrative. And there's been a lack of political courage on the part of a lot of folks in Congress.
One top Senate Democrat saying that example can be set by President Trump.
Call us together and lead this nation in some rational laws about gun safety that the overwhelming majority of Americans, Democrat, Republican, and Independent, support.
An opportunity as Trump fulfills a new presidential ritual, heading to Las Vegas Thursday to visit the site of the first mass shooting of his presidency. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Here are some of the other stories we're following at voanews.com. A campaign is tackling a controversial baby-killing ritual in Nigeria. Catalonia will declare independence from Spain within days. U.S. intelligence officials call North Korea's leader very rational. And a camera phone being used as a cancer screening tool. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is pushing back. It reports he's on the verge of stepping down. Tillerson made the statement Wednesday to State Department reporters the day NBC News reported the secretary was on the verge of resigning earlier this year after months of tensions and reported frustration with President Trump.
I think it's the most important element of the article is to reaffirm my commitment to this role that President Trump's asked me to serve and to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. I have answered that question repeatedly. For some reason, it continues to be misreported. There's never been a consideration in my mind to leave. I serve at the appointment of the president, and I'm here for as long as the president feels I can be useful to achieving his objectives.
International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sane about this, noting it was surprising for Tillerson, who rarely addresses the press.
Yes, indeed it was, Sarah, and especially this secretary, who is not given to impromptu encounters with the press, not at all. And so a lot of people in Washington were sort of holding their breath because there was a bombshell NBC news story that broke earlier describing tensions between President Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson and alleging that Secretary Tillerson had been on the verge of resigning in July and that Vice President Mike Pence had been called in to talk to him and to urge him to not resign, Vice President Pence to urge Tillerson to stay on in his post and to calm him down and sort of walk him back off the ledge.
But there have been a number of reports, I think, going back a few months, saying that things were a little rocky between the secretary and President Trump, as well as other members of the Trump administration.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of foreign policy experts say that Secretary Tillerson, as the U.S. chief diplomat, has one of the toughest jobs in town, with President Trump taking to Twitter, as he did on Sunday, basically tweeting, our wonderful Secretary of State should not be wasting his time reaching out to the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un. We'll take care of it. after Secretary of State Tillerson has said again and again that diplomacy is the first and best option with North Korea. So this is just one example of a very public clash, and many took those tweets from the president to be publicly undercutting his own Secretary of State.
Well, do you think with the statement today, though, that Mr. Tillerson has sort of has stopped these rumors, or they will be maybe continuing?
Well, the very fact, Sarah, that so many of us were watching to see if he's going to resign, I think does not bode well. I mean, I think it was an attempt to clean up, and it was addressed most of all to President Trump. But, you know, he reiterated his loyalty and praised some of the president, what he called the president's and the administration's foreign policy achievements. But I think that there are still questions, and the fact that he felt the need to react to a news story like that shows that the ground may be a bit shaky.
All right, that was VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Well, as the Spanish region of Catalonia prepares to declare independence, reportedly on Monday, the European Union is calling again for Spanish and Catalan authorities to open dialogue to defuse the somewhat violent confrontations. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Bruce Wilson, professor at the EU Center at RMIT University in Australia, just how serious this situation is.
Well, I think it's serious for the European Union, but not as serious for Spain itself. I think Spain politically is in crisis right at this time, and depending on how that crisis is resolved or not, then there could well be very serious implications for the EU more generally.
This crisis has weakened the euro, Spanish bonds and shares as well. The EU is calling for mediation. Is that possible?
Well, the Catalans themselves have been calling for mediation and for dialogue for some time, and I think the onus to address that sits very squarely with the Spanish government, which has so far refused to seek dialogue with the Catalans. This, of course, goes back for the best part of a decade that the Catalans have been seeking to renegotiate the terms of their relationship with the Spanish national constitution, and I think the time for dialogue is very, very, very much at the forefront of people's minds.
If Madrid refuses to mediate or to be involved in any kind of dialogue, and if this pushes toward violence, what might the EU have to do?
Well, I think the EU is very reluctant to intrude because these are clearly internal matters to one particular member state. And in many of its programs, many of its activities, the EU has a very clear principle of subsidiarity. That is to say that it will only be engaged with those issues or principles or activities which involve more than one member state. If it were a dispute between member states, then that would be a different matter. But when it's within one member state, the EU is very, very reluctant to be involved because it is actually outside the formal powers under the European treaties. Politically, however, the more the standoff between the Spanish parties continues, the more there will be pressure on the EU to intervene in some way.
How important is Spain to the European Union, and what would independence mean for the EU?
Oh, well, Spain is clearly one of the large members. I think its economy is fifth in the EU. So it's clearly very, very important. It occupies a significant role generally in the south of Europe, and I think the EU leaders will be very, very concerned at this instability and disruption. The question is, what powers do they have to intervene?
What would independence in Catalonia mean for the European Union?
Well, it would be a very serious issue. You will know that the immediate outcome of independence would be that Catalonia would be a separate nation and not a member of the European Union. The European Union has a very carefully laid out accession process for other nations to become part of the European Union, and Catalonia would be subject to exactly that same process and would have to demonstrate that it complied with all of the various preconditions that the EU sets. That is not something to be taken for granted. So in the immediate outcome, Catalonia would be a separate European nation outside the European Union. This, of course, is a serious issue because it parallels the circumstance of Scotland in the United Kingdom, and that is one of the underlying tensions of this issue, which also makes the EU very nervous.
That's Bruce Wilson, professor at the EU Centre at RMIT University. Well, the Trump administration's new travel ban restricts most travel on citizens from seven countries and begins on October 18th. But also happening that day is a lesser-known new policy. The Department of Homeland Security will begin a new screening process by collecting social media data from all immigrants entering the country. We're joined by Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Ashkan Amami. Thank you for being with us. So what exactly does this new plan do?
It's been a while that the U.S. has been collecting this sort of data on visa applicants and immigration applicants. Green card applicants. So what happens is that the Department of Homeland Security will collect as much information as possible, including social media information. Now, this was just published in the Federal Register now. I don't know why they waited so long to publish it. According to the administration, they're complying with some of the administrative requirements of a Privacy Act. So that's why this is, according to them, that's why this is published now. I think what's alarming to people is not that the social media information is being collected. I think that a lot of people already knew that. I think what's alarming is that they are now sharing this information across agencies throughout the Department of Homeland Security, and I think that can be really problematic. If you think about sort of how people's social media conversations can be misinterpreted, what the consequences could be for them, and sort of how they sort of will create this chilling effect, I think.
Is this even legal?
It is legal. The Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. government, has a pretty broad authority to sort of on matters of national security, especially when it comes to intending immigrants and non-immigrants. So it is legal. I think that there may be a claim that could be made that somehow U.S. citizens are affected and that free speech is affected. But I think for the most part, the focus of the program is people who are not citizens.
Okay. And so who might this affect?
It affects everyone. I think that if you're on social media and you're interacting with immigrants, you know, overseas, or even immigrants who are in the United States, I think that you should sort of be careful what you say, because there is a possibility that some agency within the Department of Homeland Security could get a hold of what you've said in the conversation and use it against you. I mean, that is a really scary proposition. So I think that it definitely could and will have a chilling effect on speech within the social media world.
Do you have any clients that are concerned that are trying to fight this? And is there any sort of repercussion for any of these people? Do they have any recourse?
There's no real recourse for these immigrants. You know, I think this is just sort of what they have to accept if they want to immigrate here. We advise all of our clients to be really careful with what they say online, though.
But isn't this, my understanding is this also applies to naturalized citizens, American citizens. Is that correct?
It applies to those who are seeking citizenship through naturalization. So, you know, it's part of the screening process. And I think that by extension, once you are a citizen, whether you're naturalized or you're born here, I think that you're still sort of subject to this type of surveillance if you're communicating with somebody who is a non-citizen trying to immigrate here.
All right. Thanks for explaining all of this to us. We appreciate it. Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Ashkan Amami. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA's International Edition continues now as we're joined by Rare.us content editor Nicole Muscella. Nicole, it's been a rough week in the news, so Hollywood is certainly a nice distraction. But I do understand that singer Lady Gaga is still dealing with some health issues.
Yeah, so she's been struggling with fibromyalgia, which she opens up about in her new Netflix documentary, Lady Gaga 5'2". And she really shows fans the pain that she goes through with this condition. And recently, she has had to postpone part of her European world tour. But over the weekend, she reassured fans that she is on the mend. She said to them that she is getting stronger every day for her little monsters, and she cannot wait to get back on stage. So hopefully she'll be back on stage entertaining her fans very soon. I know everybody's sending their thoughts to her as she faces this condition and gets on going through it.
You know, with all the heavy news this week, we do have a fun, light story, and I think that's definitely worth sort of giving everybody a break about with the mass murders and just terrible stuff happening. So we've got something about baseball star Alex Rodriguez that you've been reporting on.
So A-Rod and Jennifer Lopez have been going pretty hot and heavy, pretty strong for the last few months. They're introducing their children to one another. They're on the red carpet at the Met Gala. That was their first appearance together. And now A-Rod is joking around about how his two daughters, Natasha and Ella, might love him a little bit more now that he's dating J-Lo. He was on with Jimmy Kimmel earlier this week, and you've got to hear this.
My daughters think their dad is a hero now.
Oh, well,
for the first time.
Really?
No, I mean, you know, it's amazing. They think they went to heaven, and now they're hanging out with Jennifer backstage. They're dancing. They're singing with her. We usually call at least once a day on FaceTime. Now they call me 3, 4, 5 times. And it's funny because when I pick up the phone, I'm like, yeah, I could be anywhere. They call, I answer. So I'm like, hi, Tashi. Hi, Ella. And I can see them. They're like, hey, Daddy. And they're looking around behind me. And I'm like, hi, honey. How was school? And they're like, Dad, yeah, it was great. Where's Jennifer? And I said, oh, no, she went to the set already, honey. She's working. Oh, okay, Dad, I'll call you later. Bye, love you.
And that's that. Wow.
That is so funny. Very funny. So, hey, you know, the way to your daughter's hearts is to date a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, they're loving the fact that J-Lo is, like, helping them learn music and coaching them through, I guess, life. I mean, who could ask for a better, I don't know, pseudo-stepmom than Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah, they've already got a superstar dad, baseball player. He's a pretty big superstar in his own right.
According to A-Rod, the Baseball Hall of Fame or whatever he's involved in with baseball, I don't know much about that, but according to that, it's not that impressive to his two daughters. But dating Jennifer Lopez, very impressive.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Rare.us content editor Nicole Muscella. Well, a new film starring Luke Evans, Rebecca Hall, and Bella Heathcote, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, tells the biographical story of the man who came up with the Wonder Woman comic. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the film doesn't shy away from the character's real-life turmoil and adventure.
William Moulton Marston was a Harvard professor who was in love with two women, his wife Elizabeth and Olive Byrne, one of his students who became his assistant and later his lover. Out of their polyamorous relationship comes the Wonder Woman comic book.
She's an Amazon princess that lives on an island of all women.
Paradise Island.
And all her friends and helpers are sorority girls who have spanking parties and everybody fights Nazis and rides in an invisible plane.
Yes.
Bill, we love you truly so much. But nobody, and I say this with all the compassion and truth in my heart, nobody will ever publish this.
At the film's premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, Luke Evans said that he was most impressed that the script was based on a true story.
I mean, that's the most shocking bit is that this story is true, that this man was a Harvard professor of psychology in the 20s, went on to invent the lie detector test, or the early forms of the polygraph, what became the polygraph. then fell in love with not just his wife, but another woman who then shared their lives for the rest of his life, had a wonderful family, and then created Wonder Woman.
Australian actress Bella Heathcote, who plays Olive Byrne, says that she feels really lucky to be part of a film that tells Wonder Woman's origin story.
I mean, it's great to tell the origin story about this character who's a feminist icon, created by a feminist, based on these two women who he loved. And the message is all about empowerment and equality.
Angela Robinson, who directed several television series, including True Blood, Charlie's Angels, The L Word, and How to Get Away with Murder, directed the film. In Toronto, Robinson said her film sends a feminist message through its portrayal of women who are not afraid to follow their own desires.
My film is about, there's this really amazing love story at the center of what Wonder Woman eventually came to be. So it was really excited to kind of bring that to the screen and see where Wonder Woman kind of truly began.
William Marston died of skin cancer in 1947, but Elizabeth and Olive stayed together and reared their and Marston's children together. Professor Marston and the Wonder Women is rated R for strong sexual content, including brief graphic images and language. It opens in U.S. theaters October 13th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. And thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director as well, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late September, the government of Gaza, Hamas, announced its agreement to dissolve its governing body and allow the Palestinian Authority to assume its full responsibilities there. Hamas has also agreed to talks with the rival Fatah movement and agreed in principle to hold general elections in Gaza and the West Bank. Gaza is a self-governing Palestinian territory that was captured from Egypt by Israel during the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. In the mid-1990s, under the Oslo Accords, Israel transferred security and civilian responsibility for numerous Palestinian-populated areas of Gaza and the West Bank to the newly created Palestinian Authority, but kept control of Gaza's land and maritime borders and airspace. Since 2006, Gaza has been controlled by Hamas, which ousted the more moderate Fatah party. Hamas's stated goal since its inception has been to carry out an armed struggle against Israel. It has been a U.S.-designated foreign terrorist organization and is also designated by Israel. Therefore, since 2006, Israel and Egypt have enforced tight restrictions on movement and access of goods and individuals into and out of Gaza. The takeover of Gaza by Hamas has left the Palestinians torn between two governments, with President Mahmoud Abbas's Palestinian Authority governing autonomous areas of the West Bank. Until now, reconciliation attempts have repeatedly failed. Moving forward in its assumption of authority over Gaza on October 3rd, the Palestinian Authority cabinet met in Gaza for the first time since 2014. The United States welcomes efforts to create the conditions for the Palestinian Authority to fully assume its responsibilities in Gaza, said White House Representative for International Negotiations Jason Greenblatt. We will be watching these developments closely while pressing forward with the Palestinian Authority, Israel, and international donors to try to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza. The United States stresses that any Palestinian government must unambiguously and explicitly commit to nonviolence, recognition of the State of Israel, acceptance of previous agreements and obligations between the parties, and peaceful negotiations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.